Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Hello and good morning. Today we have Tracy D. Hall. We're going to continue our conversation between purpose and experimental. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you, Alpha?
I am fine this morning here in Chicago. Chilly morning. Snow's on the coming down on the leaves and branches outside. And from my studio window, it's beautiful.
Yes.
So last week, we ended our call with you giving a list of past projects that you've featured at Woodworks Gallery. Today, I think we're at the point where you're going to talk about your current projects and what's happening this spring of 2018.
Absolutely. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you again. Last week went by so fast, and I realized that there's been 9 exhibitions to date, and so I am sure I omitted some. The current exhibition that we have up is by Karega Kofi Moyo, photography, that really looked at 50 years ago, 1968, looks at uprising and rebellion in post MLK Chicago. So we're looking at the days after the assassination of MLK and the uprising and really a lot of devastation that was wreaked on the west side of Chicago. And accompanying that is an installation or installations by Spencer Hutchinson, who is a very promising sculptor and an artist and really a sound ecologist for his artwork. That is on view through February 23rd at Rootwork Gallery, 645 West 18th Street in Pilsen. I will stop there. Just come one, come all. Our next artist talk is February 9th, and that begins at 7 p.m. with both artists. So I definitely believe everyone should see this work. I think it's really important, and it brings us up to date with where we are in Chicago with a lot of the discourse and also thinking a lot about the history of the West Side, especially a booming business and retail sort of ecology that existed on the West Side at that time. So I think that people were really interested in Chicago's history, in Chicago's political and social histories and economic histories, as well as specifically the West Side of Chicago will have something to learn from this exhibition, as well as people who are really interested in sculpture. So I'm very, very excited about the exhibition, and again, invite one and all to the next artist talk February 9th at 7 p.m.
Okay, great. That's a great PSA. Shout out for what's coming up at Woodworks Gallery. You also had a Talk Race, Talk Rebellion artist talk last week, I guess on the 18th. And I know there was an overflow of patrons that came out to listen to that conversation.
Yes, with Deborah Crable. So Deborah Crable, if everyone can remember, the Ebony Jet Showcase. She's an amazing media personality, very thorough researcher and journalist, and she was in conversation with Karega Kofi Moyo, who goes by Kofi Moyo, who actually is the founder of Real Men Cook and created that cookbook as well. But she was really able to dig into his history and his work as a photographer, and it was a fascinating conversation. And I hope to have her back, especially in the gallery, because she is such a thorough interviewer.
And I you know, again, applaud you for the work that you're doing with the cross section or intersection of art and social justice. I did live in my point of entry into Chicago. I lived on the west side at the Switching Station Artist Loft, and there's a lot of art and artists moving into the west side. A lot of underground art communities are that have been there for decades are on the west side. So a lot of times we're not talking about what's going on on the west side of Chicago in terms of art and culture. But there's a very, very large and diverse grouping of artists and art happenings that in history that are in on the west side in Lawndale and Austin and east and west Garfield area. So, you know, it's really great that you're profiling that exhibition and things that are going on there at Woodworks. So we're going to segue into the work that you're doing at the Joyce Foundation. Can you talk about some of the projects that are just were announced last week?
Yeah, the Joyce Awards. So, absolutely. So, the Joyce Awards turned 15 years old in 2018. It was started in 2003 as a way to support artists, particularly artists of color, who are usually underrepresented in receiving commissions to create major new works for stages and platforms, public art, for orchestras, et cetera. And so the focus was to really reward people who have been working hard, who are building virtuosic bodies of work, and to support them and the organizations, agencies, arts institutions that see their work as forwarding foundational mission to support them in coming together. And so this year, we've had terrific entries from all over the Great Lakes. So it's Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, and Indianapolis. So six cities in the Midwest where we make these awards. And this year we have an amazing class. Once again, we have Onye Zuzu, who is a dancer choreographer, now working in Chicago, who has really been doing a lot of work to center non-European dance, non-Western European dance. So she's really been using African dance and contemporary modern dance as a base. So she has a project, Prodigy Tool, which will be connecting the histories and cultural histories, especially of Chicago, New Orleans, and Haiti, which is extremely timely. Although this award was made before all of the comments, you know, that have been made recently that thrust, you know, Haiti and you know, and other cultural communities into the spotlight. But she's going to be connecting the cultural histories and migration histories of these three important dots in the African diaspora. Next, Rosie Simas, who is an amazing dancer choreographer as well, working out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, who really uses indigenous dance, Native American dance, which is her own background, as the basis for thinking a little bit about multiple contemporary histories in indigenous community, especially Native American adoption, young children being adopted away from and out of their family, and all of the loss and that came from that. We have Armanta, also out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Armanta is based outside of the country in London. He is a Somali immigrant and is someone who's been doing a lot of work with the large Somali community in Minneapolis, St. Paul, working out of the Cedar. And I should say that Anya is working with Lynx Hall, and, you know, those of us in Chicago celebrate Lynx Hall for their support of dancers and of the dance ecology here. Rosie Seamus is working with the Ordway, which is a great performance hall in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Armanta is working with the Cedar Cultural Center, which is a home to folk music from all over the world, but really has been focusing on its Somali community in the neighboring Cedar area. And then finally, the last person that I, you know, really very happy to name is Jessica Care Moore, who's been doing a lot of work. She's based in Detroit, an amazing poet, performer, and has really, in a lot of ways, I think, brought a lot of attention to the histories of gentrification that have happened all over the Midwest, but particularly in Detroit, where there's a tension between the new Detroit, you know, which is, you know, with a lot of newcomers doing a lot of cultural work, and then the cultural stewards of Detroit, the people who have been in Detroit, lived in Detroit, born and raised in Detroit, and have been, you know, keeping Detroit intact and together, you know, culturally, unheralded and largely unsupported. And so really excited to see what she's going to do with Salt City, a work that she's going to be bringing to the Wright Museum. So those are our four. That's our cohort of four, amazing cohort, and we're really looking forward to the work that they're going to do in their respective city.
Wow, that's I mean, that's a really great lineup. I looked at them when this was released last week and kind of read their background and their bios, and I thought each artist, you know, and applaud them for the amazing work that they're doing. I haven't been to St. Paul. I have, of course, been up to Detroit and checked out the art scene there with Roots and Remedies. It's a national group that goes out and they do a lot of training in different cities annually. And I got a chance to be in the landscape of art and social justice movement there. And I did meet Jessica at that time, and they were instrumental in helping to host that huge conference. So, and then I saw that cross-section of what was happening there with Turn Off People's Water, you know, and then the rallying call that came, you know, and the monopoly that's happening with the buildings and, you know, the billionaires that are coming in buying up, you know, blocks of properties, and it goes on and on and on. But I also saw the terrific work that artists are doing to help rebuild on a grassroots level and infusing the arts with, you know, urban renewal in some parts of the city as well. So, I again, you know, that's great that she was selected for this. And perhaps I'll take a road trip and get over here to, you know, St. Paul to check out the other winners as well this year.
Yeah, Minneapolis, St. Paul is, you know, to your point, to, you know, what you were saying about Detroit, it's also a place where, you know, there's a really vibrant artist-led and DIY scene, as well as a lot of very progressive arts organizations. And, you know, Joyce has, you know, had an opportunity to support commissions at for, you know, Public Art St. Paul with the Ordway, the O'Shaughnessy, Guthrie, Penumbra, which is an African-American theater that's based in an African-American community that is really thriving and alive with a lot of ideas and also with a very pronounced social justice and racial equity mission. So, and I know I'm leaving. You can't talk about this work without, you know, saying some names and leaving others out. But I definitely think that each of the cities, you know, that we are working in just have an amazing art scene and really progressive artists, artists who are problem solvers, who are using their art to elevate the art itself, but also to really react to, you know, critical social issues and, you know, in the events of our times. And so, and, you know, and obviously I think that when I think about Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's hard to even talk about that without thinking about Print. The more that I find out about him as I travel to that area, the more I realize that as much as he was on the national stage and you know, really making you know, really beautiful music and important music, he was also in lockstep with the surrounding community, and particularly, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul. So I think that there's something to be said, you know, for Joyce, you know, in our work in general, really trying to support artists in cracking codes and trying new ideas and in being the advance guard in a lot of ways and in terms of thinking about proposing solutions to what seem to be intractable problems. And I think that that's exactly what, you know, artists do. And over the next few years, we want to continue to push that forward. And then also with the Joyce Awards, we want to respond to the fact that there are a lot of emerging artists who are building really dense and important bodies of work while they're still early in their career. So we are going to be really looking for early career artists as well as post-emergent and mid-level and master artists you know, for the Joyce Awards over the next few years.
I mean, as you were talking, I was looking at measurement and how you – the Joyce Foundation and what your program is doing with, you know, I know there was quite a few entries and artists applying for the awards, or how does that work? Do they apply, or does the Joyce Foundation kind of seek them out because you're following the great work that they're doing, or what's your processes?
Yeah, well, for the most part, any, you know, artists and organizations come together, and they can be arts institutions, community institutions, et cetera. They don't always have to be, you know, a presenting arts organization or a museum or something like that. The artists and the institution will together create an application, and the application really proposes what an artist is desiring to do in a particular geography, in one of those six cities, and in proposing that, they're thinking about three things. They're thinking about the artist and the body of work the artist is building, and the artist as an expert in building a particular type of work, and how that secondly applies to a local landscape, geography, issue, et cetera. And then thirdly, how that work is going to advance the mission of the organization. So in a particular case with Armanta, for instance, Armanta has been doing a lot of work to resurrect Somali music after there was a real sort of tamp down on Somali music in reaction to a very strict, you know, sort of code, sort of a tamp down on cultural expression in general within, you know, a particular conservative community. And so what Armanta has been doing is collecting music, making new music, and he really wants to add to the canon and add to the body of recorded and disseminated Somali music. And so he's been doing that all over the world. And CEDAR has been working with him because the CEDAR Center has a large Somali community that over time has developed around it. And it really sees its mission as not only supporting folk music and live music, but particularly serving this community as well. And so we are able to see the connection between this artist who has been doing this kind of work all along, knows how to do it, is kind of creating a way of working with community, a co-creation process with community wherever he goes, and then a community organization, an arts organization that really sees the import of reaching out to the exact same constituency. And then also, you know, a community that's really in need and is underserved and is very ethno-linguistically specific. So in some ways, you know, it is that kind of perfect alignment that is the mark of a great Joyce Award, or at least a contender, that the artist is already working out a way of using their art to make a certain type of as an inflection point in a discourse, and the organization is thinking about that too, and there's a ready and willing community.
Yeah, and so with that, you talk a lot about. I'm really interested. I mean, I can't. I'm bouncing back and forth between all four projects, and I'm really excited. You know that each of them, you know, are doing this wonderful. I mean, you know, wonderful work in bridging. I'm just looking at the pulse. I don't know. The pulse is it the correct word to use that they're bringing to the each of the cities and how that again intersects with what's going on with the government there or the governing bodies
mm-hmm.
there.
Can
you talk
yeah.
about that for a minute? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think this idea of artists as I'm just going to say urban planners, then you know, change makers, not necessarily urban. It doesn't have to be in an urban context, but I would say that this idea of the artist citizen, right, or the citizen artist, the idea that artists are as engaged as any other type of community steward in change and developing out opportunities and in, you know, sort of knocking down barriers and bringing people together in community revitalization. I think, you know, this is really, I think, a time, we're at a time in our history where we're recognizing that that has always been the case. And the idea that, you know, artists are making work in a vacuum, you know, in a studio, to stay in a studio or to move from one airtight type of situation to the next, I think is probably a fallacy. And, you know, I think that some of the most important artists of our time have been modeling for us, you know, ways of solving problems or different scenarios. So I think in Joyce's larger portfolio, so the Joyce Awards falls into our portfolio of creativity and cultural production, where we really focus on supporting underrepresented artists in both making work and also supporting initiatives that are going to codify the work, study the work, evaluate the work, archive the work, review and critique the work, and make it findable by, you know, by audiences and by scholars. Because we know that artists who are underrepresented have fewer opportunities to show their work, and that work is more ephemeral, meaning that it's not, you know, sometimes studied or watched or written about. So you see it exists an amount of time, and then it exists only in memory after that. So creativity and cultural production is one of our areas of focus over the next 3 years. The next is arts leadership and workforce development, where we really are thinking about who the next generation of people who are going to be leading arts institutions and working in arts institutions, who are the next art entrepreneurs, who are the next people who are going to be dramaturgs and set designers and production assistants and working on film crews, people who can make you know, a living wage and support themselves, their families, their dreams by working within the arts sector. And how do we diversify that pipeline as well? And then finally, our third area is that we're looking at arts access and participation. And arts access is, you know, traditional, Alpha, because we've always been talking about, you know, how do we make sure that everyone has equitable access to the arts. But what I think we're really focusing on, Joyce, as well, is how do we support our neighborhood organizations who are usually the unsung providers of that first contact with the arts, but who are also the on-ramp usually for deeper arts participation, where people learn, go from learning to love dance to becoming a dancer, from learning to love drama and acting to becoming an actor, learning to love music to becoming a musician. So we really want to support community-based instruction, not school-based or after-school-based, but community-based instruction where adults as well as younger people can have access to really high-quality but low-barrier arts instruction. So I hope by rounding out that portfolio for our entire cultural program, it sort of speaks to the kind of work we want to do, ambitious work, hard work, to really do infrastructure development. So we're not necessarily just interested in one-off programs. Those are great, but we really want to do deeper investment so that we have deeper and longer-lasting yields, and that we can really support culture and the arts in really changing the topography of our cities, changing the landscape of our cities for the better.
That's some of the I have coined a phrase, tactical urbanism, and you kind of, you know, given that definition in the work that you're doing and the way you express the need for that work and going into unsanctioned public spaces and how extremely important in today's discourse over how public space is used and allocated. And with that tactical urbanism is some of the things that neighborhood programmers, you know, have been doing, and they've also been doing a lot of participatory, you know, art programming, which we're talking about, oh, this is placemaking in the arts, and it's just something that, you know, instinctively, I don't know, something that we've been committed to, you know, over the years and over the decades is just making sure that this art that we're doing is meaningful, you know, and again, that phrase that I use is that tactical urbanism in what we do and how we implement programming and how we stage programming that connect the public with, you know, our spaces and what we do. We only have like 3 minutes left, would you believe it, on this call? And I wanted to kind of ask you, how do you see your role as a tactical urbanist and creating public participatory projects? And the other question, if you can answer in this 3 minutes, is in, how do you envision the future present?
How do I
as
envision
an art administrator, as an administrator, as a consultant? Because I saw that you had this Good Seed Consulting Group, Building a Better Community, that you also you have under in your resume, but. And then also as a gallery owner and artist, how do you envision the future present?
Wow, I would say in 3 minutes, I would say I envision the future. I think just like maybe my career that you sort of mentioned is seamless. I think that we have to be committed to live the same kinds of public and private lives. And I really, the reason why I'm bringing it down to the personal is because that's where it begins. I say all the time, corporations are made up of people. And usually the people in power are dictating sort of the values that we see. And at any time, you know, we can challenge those and change them. So I imagine also, too, as a tactical urbanist, I think a certain type of I think, ethics and values, valuing people a lot. I think there is something that I always call the wisdom of the group, or the way of looking into people and joining with people, you know, in relationship and in conversation, to push forward towards towards a better tomorrow, for a desired future, and to push against issues of tyranny, issues of inequity, et cetera. But I think we do have to live the same type of a private life as we live, you know, publicly, so that, you know, the person who will be serving groups of people should love individuals and should be able to have good relationships and should be trusted and trustworthy, et cetera. So I think that's probably where, you know, let the lies that we live in the shadow come to light, and let the light that we, you know, emit, let that illuminate the shadows. I hope that makes sense.
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense, because you can't live a contradictionary life, you know, when you're in the public sphere. And for me as a painter, if I can't transcend the power of my spirit, you know, and my gift for people to feel the image or feel the passion that I put in my art, I failed myself, you know. And I think that says the same thing with other projects that we do and how well people come out and they hear our artist talks and our conversations, because they know that we really believe in what we're doing. So anything you want to add? We only have like 25 seconds left.
I'm really thankful to you and thankful to for the work you're doing in the cultural work and the culture work that you're doing. And I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation about tactical urbanism with you offline. And thank you to everyone who has listened in as well.
All right. Thank you for joining us. Tracy D. Hall, Part 2, Between Purpose and Experimental.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits the non-traditional gallery setting. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.